Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Kirk Gray's online. Hey, Kirk.
Hey, Fred. Good to talk to you again.
Yeah. In our last episode, we were talking about your famous earbuds that went through the wash and they worked. Now, when you first pulled them out, did you expect them to work? Were you shocked or surprised?
No, I was not going to be surprised if they didn't work. Right. I would be hoping they worked. I'd be happy if they worked.
Lo and behold, they did. Right.
Right.
Let's go to the store. Right. Let me tell you a quick little story. I went to a rental car place. I was back east someplace and they had a brand new red convertible Mustang. And mm-hmm. You have that. That's your car. And I went out and I couldn't close the door. The body had sagged enough that the door didn't align. You had to lift the end of the door about an inch and a half to get it to latch.
Okay.
Right. I got out of the car and said, I want a car that works.
Right.
Right. Right. You know, but when you're shopping, right, we're making a judgment as is this going to be good or not good and stuff like that. So
right.
how do people, because part of creating a product is to make it reliable, right? Well, how do customers determine at the point of purchase or shortly after or through Yelp reviews or whatever that it's reliable? Is that a topic we should talk about?
Sure. I mean, you just pointed out some of the ways that I use. First of all, I trust Consumer Reports a lot of their testing and their evaluation of products, although it's not for the long term, but they do use surveys. Of course, they ask all their members to complete a survey every spring and fall about the cars, about their,
washing machines, coffee makers. Yeah, there's a long list of products on those surveys.
Oh, yeah. And blenders. Now, that's a topic that we've had at my house quite a low reliability on. I know I've mentioned it before that I had a blender I was going to take apart. Well, my wife just destroyed another one. Fred, she's one of the best stress testers I've ever seen.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if she just put – and that's the question, you know, what is expectation with that blender? Can you put rocks in it? What, you know, you put ice, how hard and what?
Yeah, well, there's YouTube videos where they blend phones and blend all kinds of stuff.
Does it blend? Yes, yeah. I've seen that. Does it blend? But I'm surprised that this brand new blender would burn up that quickly no matter what. Because I would expectation is that if something was going to be abused by the consumer, such as you could lock up those blades, that there would be a protection circuit in there that would disengage and not allow the motor to be burned up and you wouldn't see smoke come out of the
– Right, right.
You know, so that to me is a common way that
– But how would you – I mean, Consumer Reports gives you robustness and stuff, but when you're at the store, right, and you look at it, do you – check the bearings and how strong the motor is and look for protection circuitry.
We can't do that.
Well, we could. They'd try to chase us out of the store. If you came in with a tool kit and you got to take it apart.
Why am I here taking your blender apart? Well, I just want to make sure that it's got a protection circuit.
That's right.
No, right. We really rely on the market to tell us a lot of friends.
Which is amazing, though, is that it's a small sample set, right? And usually people that do post are either ecstatic, they love the product and they had it.
Right.
They just got it out of the box, it's bright and shiny, they haven't even used it yet. Or it failed on opening of the box, or it failed after 2 weeks, and then they wrote a negative review. And so it's kind of, you're looking for the ones without a bunch of negative reviews.
Well, we know that people are more likely to write a negative review than a positive review.
Right. So you're looking for the ones that don't have And I think Amazon finally cracked down on people that were writing positive reviews and getting paid to do it, right?
Right.
And never owned the product, never actually purchased one. So they're saying this was a person that actually purchased this thing. So that a little bit of a guard there. Now, let's say you're at a hardware store and you're looking to buy a new hammer. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And if you pick up a hammer and the head is loose, the metal part of the business end of the hammer is loose, or the handle is, the grip on it is, a lot of them come with these plastic sleeve grips. Mm-hmm. If it's loose, right, you could pull it right off, or it's a wooden handle and it's already splintered, right?
Right.
And it's rough. And
So
those would give it away right away.
Immediately. Right. They're not going to sell.
You're going to put that one back. Right.
Right. And most people would. Right. It's going to be pretty poor.
And so in like for a blender. we don't have that mechanism anymore in cars, even more so is except for that Mustang. And if you get into a car for a test drive and it doesn't start, it's a pretty good sign you're not going to buy that one.
That's true. I mean, obviously, there's some things really patent that you can just pick up right there. You can look at it and say, no, I can see the metal, or I can this chassis flexes too easy, or you know, you feel it.
Oh, the paint. Plastic. Yeah, I saw one car, brand new car, and you could the paint was, it was it didn't have 100% coverage. You could see the base layer, which was a different color.
Yeah, and so that just gives it away right there.
It does.
But obviously some come after use. Like I thought this brand of blender that my wife purchased, it was $100. Mm-hmm. And I know that you can go and buy one similar for $20, $25, $30. So I was expecting, I guess, you know, we all kind of correlate, some of us or tend to say, hey, you pay more for it. It's probably got a, it's more robust.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. And that's not always true because, it broke fairly quickly, relatively as quickly as the $26.
Well, that was wasn't that a Timex thing? They were competing for wristwatches against Rolex. Rolex, and Rolex was advertised. All these high end watches were jeweled movements and all this other stuff, very precise machining and instruments. But Timex came in and said, hey, it'll take a licking and keep on. So those that didn't catch it in the last episode, this is the giveaway. It's a Timex, their catchphrase. But they said, hey, we're not going to be as expensive and we're going to last longer.
Right.
But that was advertising, though. That set expectation that it was pretty solid.
Well, they were countering what I just said, that the higher price means a more robust product. So they were countering the idea that the product was inexpensive is going to be fragile.
Right.
You know, so their whole point was, look, even though this is a very low end or a consumer inexpensive watch, it takes a licking and keeps on ticking. And that was, I forget the guy, he always was the same guy that did that.
They
tie it to a bulldozer track or something, you know, they would do it. Of course, it wasn't. Wasn't real long duration or anything, but it did show some extreme stress conditions that they were putting through, or at least appeared to be extreme stress.
Now, I don't remember the Samsonite luggage. They would throw it in
the
gorilla and bouncing on it and stuff like that. They should have gave it to some of the luggage handlers down at Denver. Not that they're gorillas, but they could tear up that equipment. Can certainly tear up some of it.
If you could break a suitcase, they will.
But it's, you know, it's all automated. So it goes through all these chutes and baffles and drops and everything else. Yeah. And if it gets caught in the machinery, it's eaten.
So,
but it's one of those things that it was a perception. And I think it still holds is that the more expensive stuff, for watches, it was more precise. It would keep time. It was a finely tuned mechanical device. Right. And then Timex and others came out and said, hey, we're making digital watches. They keep time just fine, right? And their advantages is that they're more robust than the finely jeweled systems.
Right.
So you could wear this to work. You can wear it at the construction site, and you don't have to worry about it. It's going to work for you. Whereas, people probably wouldn't wear their, $10,000 Rolex to a construction site.
probably not.
Just not when they're out working.
From a cosmetic standpoint, again, it's scratched.
That's right.
But nowadays, of course, look at the Fitbit, the Apple Watch, the devices that are carried on, that are basically very complex little computers on your wrist. Mm-hmm. And we really don't, it's almost like a solid piece of material. I mean, there's probably very little airspace, if any at all, in there.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's no movement. I mean, you just got almost like a silicon block. But still, that's a question of how robust does an Apple Watch have to be?
Well, what do you expect? Like
Right.
If I go swimming, if I do a triathlon, should it survive with me? Now, there are watches that can, and they had heart rate monitors mm-hmm. built in them, but they were triathlon watches, and they were pretty solid. I wore them for a couple of years in pretty hard training and never had a problem.
And
Apple Watch, it's more expensive. I'd be more leery. This is a bit, it's clunkier. So I would be afraid of hitting something with it.
Right.
Yeah, but it's that price versus durability part. They're not advertising it's durable. Whereas I don't remember the brand I had before, but it was made for triathlons. And it was advertised as doing triathlons.
But here the market's expecting durability and expecting, I think a normal person that would buy one of these watches would expect a pretty robust device just because of the fact that, that's kind of, we know electronics can be dropped and shocked pretty good with our phones mm-hmm. being dropped and any portable device, especially like remote controls for your TV, those kinds of things. So the expectation now is that we can hit electronics pretty hard, I think. So there is kind of a natural evolution of expectations for.
Well, at what point, though, would you say, oh, that's my fault?
That's a good question, Fred. Right? That's the $100. That's the $64 million question. Is where does the customer say this is a cheaply built or cheaply designed product or flimsy or whatever? And where are they going to point to themselves and say, I really did go beyond what should be or could be expected to survive? And and of course, you're kind of mad at yourself, but you're also mad at the product manufacturer that he could have made it a little more robust or to me, I think, also the consumer is kind of responsible for maybe increasing the robustness by adding a case. I think anybody walking around with an iPhone, it's not in a case. I don't think.
You're living on the edge.
On the edge, because that's one piece of hard metal hitting a hard surface if it's concrete. And I wouldn't expect to survive, but nothing else, it's certainly going to dent it up. If not shatter the glass, still work.
Well, it gets complicated, I think. And I think different people have different attitudes towards that, right? Now, my wife has a forum, a discussion forum, and has developed a number of friends there and stuff. And one of her friends got online. It was kind of absent for a couple mm-hmm. of days. And then got online and said, I had the worst iPhone disaster day ever. And
oh, no.
this is what I think is going to change our expectation of robustness, though. She said, my phone died, right? So mm-hmm. the alarm didn't go off in the morning. So I woke up and I had 10 minutes to get to work. I went to the coffee shop and I don't carry cash. I use Apple Pay, but my phone was dead, so I couldn't get coffee. My mm-hmm. bus pass is on my phone. It was an Apple Pay type system to get on the bus. The phone was dead, so she couldn't do that. She couldn't call the office because she doesn't have a landline. She just uses the phone, iPhone. Couldn't call the office to tell them this disaster is happening. She's running late. Right. She usually gets to work using Uber, mm-hmm. but she didn't that up out of the phone.
This is kind of the problem of convergence. We pull it all into one device and putting all your eggs in one basket, sort of. We like the convenience of that, but then we become incredibly dependent on it.
Well, right. Well, she has a smartphone that, but she only powers it on when she is expecting a call when she's not home. So it's
really?
Not
she
her phone.
She powers it off. Okay.
It's dead powered off. 99% of the time.
Okay.
And so if she's going to the store and knows that I'm going to call her after I check some recipes or whatever. Or if one of her kids is landing at the airport, she turns it on when she's waiting to pick them up.
Right.
Right. Stuff like that. So it's like 10 times a year.
She's a landline user.
Yeah. They exist. They're out there. But with her point, you know, if her phone was dead, it would be inconvenient because she would miss the communication that she had anticipated. Like when we're landing at the airport, we call and say, come pick us up. If that didn't happen, she would have to park the car and go stand at the gate, you know, go stand at the airport.
Right.
And you could deal with it, but not like this other woman that had set expectations so high. Right. That a dead battery or it wouldn't charge, it had something wrong with the charging circuit.
Right,
she was out of business. And it's the same with me. If I lose my laptop on a business trip, I'm done, right? I got it. I don't have a backup. I need a backup. It has to be reliable. Cars are that way.
Your phone.
Yeah. And cars are like that way. And there's all kinds of products. Now, when you lose a blender, right? If you're at a bar and you're a bar that makes margaritas all day,
You're kind of in trouble.
You're in trouble.
I mean, you're losing revenue.
Right. Where at other cases, then it's, we'll just use crushed ice. We'll, use rocks instead of crushed ice today. But it's.
Right. But a phone is becoming a lifeline and a very critical, if nothing else, a dependency for most people. My daughter has a phone, an Android phone that just recently had the USB connector, the little mini USB. Mm-hmm. And I hear they go to the phone store and he says, they're having problems with the mini USB. They switched to the micro or something like that. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know about that. But anyway, that port couldn't charge. I couldn't get a connection. She won't let me have it long enough for me to try and see if I can clean it. But
you want to take it apart. That's all you want to do.
Well, I'd like to. Well, I don't know if I can do that. They're pretty sealed units now. We found that there is an alternative nowadays. They have a charging
pad.
Apparently, they have an inductive coupled. Charging capability in this particular phone model. So since we haven't completely, it hasn't been 2 years, and that's, to me, says this phone was not designed properly. If it can't last for at least the contract period of plugging and unplugging, and of course you're going to have a dirty, people don't protect their little USB charger cable.
Sunscreen on it. It's going to have dirt on it.
Right. You're
going to
shove it into that little port.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Apple phones, you can actually get it. I've cleaned out the lint from the charging port and it works again. But at least there's an alternative. So, again, this phone has failed and she's incredibly dependent on it. I mean, teenagers today, everything's there. And so it's really, I guess it's unreliable. This makes me wonder.
Well, what's your daughter's take on it? If she can't charge.
Oh, she's mad as hell.
Does she blame the design, the company? Would she buy that brand again?
She blames the company.
Yeah.
She blames the quality of the phone. And I do too, because she hasn't abused it. It's not like she dropped it on the connect, with it plugged in and it hit on the corner and hit the plug charger and may have broken
the cable But yeah, so there's that expectation, but there's that rising expectation that my phone just has to work. Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Where and then when something, it could be, you have an alternate way to charge. It could be a 2-day repair at the shop. You take it in and they replace that connector for you.
Right.
I know I had this. I had a similar thing. I had an ear jack or a headset jack on an old Samsung phone I had. And they sent me 3 of them in a year because of the jack failing.
3 phones?
Yeah, because the jack would fail.
In a year?
Yeah, and you could feel it. The jack would come loose from the case or from its circuit board. And so when you push the jack in, it would just push the connector away from it.
So after they sent you the second one, Fred, did you say, come on, guys, this company can't produce a phone correctly?
I did that the first time.
I'm going to go to another brand.
No, I did that the first time. They're sending me a free one each time. They're like, all right, I'll try it. Maybe it was just, and after the third one, then my contract was up in it because they didn't extend the warranty each time. It was still the normal part. And I said, all right, I'm out of here. got something out.
Yeah.
But it was, for me, it was, come on, what's the deal? And the person on the phone's reading a script and it's right. not the right person
they
to talk to.
Right. They just go through the procedures that they're taught.
But the idea, though, is that I think everybody has a different life experience with mm-hmm. all kinds of products in all kinds mm-hmm. of different circumstances. Right. And then they set their own criteria of how they judge a product as being reliable or not. And, and some use price and some use Yelp or reviews or consumer reports. Some use their previous experience. Hey, this washing machine worked for me for 10 years. I'll get another one. But as products get more important, like your daughter's example or mm-hmm. my wife's friend's example, the tolerance for failure goes down.
Right? Sure.
And I think
the expectations.
Yeah, the expectation. It should just work. And it may or may not be their fault. They may have dropped it. They may have done something wrong. But hey, no, it just needs to work.
Right. But if they haven't dropped it and they haven't abused it, like my daughter's phone, and it was just normal, the plugging in and out failed it, then that to me is for sure.
Well, that's you and me, though, Kurt.
And
that's
design.
You and me. That's you. Us reliability folks think that way, where if somebody's just using their phone, they're not looking at the specs. They're not saying, this should survive 100 cycles. It should just work. Right. And it's irregardless of how I use it. So if I leave it on the dashboard of my car, if I drop it in the toilet, if I do all these other things, I pick it up, clean it off, and it should still work. And especially as it becomes more critical.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And at some point, people are going to have to say, all right, if it's that critical, get a backup. have a second one ready to go.
Right. And that's what, my daughter says, it's my battery's dead. When it did charge, when I could use a USB port. And I said, you're going to need to carry a little backup battery because it is critical that you contact me when, you're late or something like that. So, yes, you're right. There needs to be an alternative when we become dependent. That dependent would be like, a heart-lung machine.
Well, I mean, there's mission-critical stuff. And there's kinds of things like that. And there's others that, like the hammer example, like I wouldn't buy it because it just feels bad right from the start. Right. Well, we don't have that luxury all the time. So let's wrap it up there. One of the thoughts is that we have to make that judgment all the time as customers, as consumers, is this product good or not good? And some we can do at the store, others we can't.
We can do online, and some, different methods.
But that criteria is constantly changing. I think that's the message back to the design teams, is that just because it was good last model does not mean it's going to be good on your next generation. Customers are constantly evolving in their expectations of how robust and durable your product should be.
And manufacturers are becoming more creative on how to, such as removing a port, like a earbud port that Apple did, to make it more robust, which makes it water resistant.
Ish.
Well, they're pushing it.
Yeah. I'm not pushing it. I'm going to keep it dry as best I can. I've had 10 years of keeping my phone dry. I can do it for another 10 years.
Until
we start pouring water into it for a hydrogen power pack cell, and then I'll pour water in it. But until then, no thanks. Yeah. But anyway, thanks, Kirk. And we'll chat again soon, I'm sure. And so I'll let you get on to chasing that fly around your studio there and get rid of that.
Hopefully. Right. Well, hopefully you have a good day, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thanks, Kirk.
Thank you, Fred.
Hi, this is Adam Barrett of Apex Ridge Reliability. Apex Ridge Reliability is an engineering consulting service that advances your product development with reliability tools, methods, cultural practices, and education to ensure you create mature and reliable products. To learn more, go to ascendoreliability.com/go/apex.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic, that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.